This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. In the news this week, a dictator in Libya held on as the U.S. plunged into the fog of another war. From a no-fly zone to CIA agents reportedly on the ground in Libya, President Obama stated his case for intervention this week, but said the U.S. will not be able to dictate the pace and scope of change in that country.
Only the people of the region can do that. But we can make a difference. I believe that this movement of change cannot be turned back, and that we must stand alongside those who believe in the same core principles that have guided us through many storms.
Some applauded the president, but other lawmakers on both sides of the aisle continued to call him too hasty. Among them, Massachusetts Democrat Michael Capuano, who said the president should have consulted Congress first.
I feel strongly that no individual should be empowered to bring this country to war.
And while Libya dominated much of the news this week, the way millions of Americans get their news changed in a big way. If you've been reading the New York Times online for free, those days ended this week as the Times introduced digital subscriptions. The Boston Globe will put much of its material behind a paywall in the fall.
And as the nation's unemployment rate continued to edge downward to the lowest level in 2 years, the talk in Massachusetts was how to keep jobs here and whether big tax breaks to corporations are the best way to do that.
And what happens when companies like Evergreen Solar take the money and send the jobs to China? Those are some of the stories we'll dive into in our Week in Review panel. And joining us now, as she often does, columnist Renee Loth of the Boston Globe. Renee, always good to have you.
Thank you. How are you?
Good. And we're pleased as well to welcome back Charlie Sennett, executive editor and vice president of Global Post. Thanks so much for being here, Charlie. Great to have you.
Thanks.
So, Charlie, let's start with you and with Libya. It's a confusing, murky picture that's emerging from the ground there. We have high-profile defections. We have rumors of more defections, but then you have Gaddafi's forces driving rebels back in spite of a no-fly zone. What's happening?
Well, I think the defections are really important, and I think this sort of new analysis that it feels like the regime is crumbling from within in Tripoli is really interesting. It's new. The defection of the foreign minister is a big deal. Some of these others that are coming forward now make this a very uncertain situation. You know, I wouldn't have seen that, but then again, these are days in the Middle East where you can predict nothing.
Yeah.
And I think that there are no regional trends. I think each country has its own reality. Egypt had its own certain laws of gravity that caused Mubarak to be toppled. Libya has a very different one. I think the no-fly zone is going to have great impact, but I think, you know, when Obama says we can make a difference, that is true. But it seems like the wisest strategy may be to allow the events to unfold on their own and let them take their own course.
Mm. Renee, what do you see here? I wanted to ask about the limits of air power again. This seems to come up again and again. There's a debate about committing air power, then we do it, and then we learn that we can't necessarily turn the tide on the ground.
Yeah, you know, it is a murky situation, and I very much liked the president's speech. I'm heartened that we have a president who is able to speak to the American people as if we're grown-ups. I think I think the idea of humanitarian intervention in Libya has a lot of public support, but there's still a lot of questions mm-hmm. about our policy there, and they're, you know, indicated by the events on the ground or in the air and on the ground. You know, we say that we're not there to affect regime change, and yet, you know, we say that in the same breath that success in Libya will be the deposition of Gaddafi. And so if that's not regime change, what is?
What is, right.
And, you know, so I think there's still a lot of questions. I agree with Charlie. It's an unfolding situation on the ground. Just letting it run its own course like a fever, though, I think, we've seen that the rebels need some support, either it's military or training or something. And, you know, I think we've already played our hand and said that we want to tilt in one direction. And so
no-fly zone allows the U.S. to have impact on the margins in supporting the opposition. When I say let it unfold on its own, I really mean in Tripoli. This idea of inserting CIA sort of special forces raises the specter of maybe more than a no-fly zone, and that's where I think this thing gets really perilous. Mm.
And what do we know, speaking of the opposition, what do we know about who these rebels are? I was listening to Secretary of Defense Robert Gates on Capitol Hill, and he said, I would say there are multiple agendas, very disparate elements across the country. At this point, we don't have a lot of visibility into those. We don't know who these folks are.
If they don't have visibility, I don't know how reporters who aren't there could either. I have read some pretty interesting reports from the ground. And some of them actually in among the four New York Times colleagues, including our own Anthony Shadid. The Boston Globe could still claim him, right?
Well.
I thought embedded in some of their reporting has been some of the best material I've seen about who is this opposition. And they were sort of out there on the fringes, I think, gathering sort of the some of the clearest reporting I've seen. But I think it's very opaque. I don't think we know. I don't think... This idea that they are all Islamists is true, but I also think it's very naive to think there isn't an Islamic militant element.
Well, it's very interesting. Finally, on Libya, I wanted to talk about the president got some good reviews on the speech. He also stated the moral case for interventions, but there was also criticism from the right and from the left. We heard Congressman Michael Capuano of Somerville saying that members of Congress should have been consulted in a way that they weren't. This is an old debate, isn't it, Renee, about war powers and this tension between Congress and the presidency. It's been going on certainly my whole life.
Well, we're not calling this a war, are we?
Right.
What are we calling it?
An action.
An action. That sort of, you know, waves of Vietnam there. You can parse the laws about whether Obama should have, gotten congressional approval for this action. I just think that, the same people who are complaining about that are saying that, you know, he's acting too hastily, saying that he's not acting hastily enough. You know, it's a no-win for the president in this situation.
Yeah. What's your take on that, Charlie?
I would disagree in the sense that I think actually it's not hasty to enforce a no-fly zone, and I don't know that you would need to seek congressional approval to get that done. I think the idea of looking to congressional approval for the War Powers Act is huge. But I don't think this is a war. And I think that the President of the United States and the Pentagon are very busy with two very real wars. And this no-fly zone needed to be executed quickly. They'd already hesitated and taken some sort of... They already had a hitch in their step. You know, this was days away from a bloodbath.
Right.
And I think the hourglass was turned, and I think they were watching the sand sift down, and I think this administration had to act quickly.
And there would be much different headlines if the administration was answering questions about why didn't you stop the bloodbath. So interesting point. Well, more to come on Libya, of course. It was the big story this week, and as we mentioned, the way Americans are getting their news continued to change. A lot of New York Times readers might soon be hearing something like this.
Excuse me. Please deposit 5 cents for the next 4 minutes.
Okay. Well, maybe they won't be hearing that, but we understand the principle.
Wow, you went to the archives.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't believe they even have, like, drop a dime is a phrase that's gone.
Just to bring our listeners in really quickly, the New York Times instituted a paywall. If you get home delivery, you can continue to get access for online news. If not, you'll have free access for 20 articles a week, after which you'll have to pay. Will this work, Charlie?
I hope it does. I think that the economics of journalism these days require people to be thinking through ways to pay for great journalism. You know, great journalism is not free. I mean, at Global Post, we are a free website. It's a destination site, but we have membership.
Right.
And what
for
our strategy...
exclusive content, right?
Right. And what our strategy has been is to say, look, this is a free site sustained by advertising dollars as we work our way toward being self-sustaining. And other revenue streams as well, but one of them in membership, really making the pitch that, look, if you support journalism around the world like Global Post is trying to do, please support it. Not unlike the pitches that you're having right now. And you say, you know, you get people who support great journalism to recognize it needs to be paid for. Now, I have a subscription to the New York Times, so this has very little impact on me.
Me too.
Right? So I get it delivered. I'm still old-fashioned that way. I like to have
I like
it.
The ink on my fingers in the morning.
And I don't think, you know, I'm very much involved in the digital realm right now, and I don't think there's such a neat divide here that, you know, everything must be free. I don't agree with that. Mm. I think that Phil Balboni, our CEO, has articulated the need for these models to be figured out in which great journalism has great value, and we have to assess that and go forward. So good luck to the New York Times.
Renee, what do you think? Because they tried something like this before. They tried to charge for some of their most popular content, like The Columnist. It didn't work. It was deemed a failure. Do you think it'll work this time?
Well, you know, it's a slightly different model, and it is a gamble. There's no question about it. But I have to believe with Charlie that people will pay for quality journalism. You know, it's expensive to sue the Pentagon. You know, it's expensive to have a investigative team working on a project, five people for a year. You know,
correspondent in Afghanistan or Baghdad.
That's right. You know, Robin Young had on her show just today the one of the heroic journalists from the New York Times who was captured in Libya. And, you know, it's just a harrowing story. And you cannot get that kind of journalism blogging in your pajamas.
That's right, yeah.
And it's very expensive. And I have to believe that people will see the value in quality journalism and will pay for it.
Now, a slightly different model, Renee, coming in the fall for the Boston Globe, but the same idea, obviously.
Well, you know, the design is still being worked out, the details of that design. At the Globe, I think, you know, we'll be trying to sort of split the baby. We'll still be looking for the advertising dollars that follow large numbers of eyeballs to the website with a free site, and then we will also have a paid site that will have more depth and, you know, you might even want to call it more serious journalism that people will pay for in a kind of subscription model. So we're going to be trying both. And it's going to be very delicate to decide, you know, what goes on the free site and what goes on the pay site, because you don't want to cannibalize one for the other.
Well, it's going to be an interesting thing to watch, and clearly news organizations have to figure out how to tap into this brave new world. All right, it's Friday afternoon. Let's set aside some of this heavy war and politics and talk of paywalls and turn to our hubbub, that little gem of a story from the past week that caught your eye that maybe flew under the radar. Meghna, my co-host, come back into this conversation. Tell me what you've got for a hubbub.
Actually, mine is not so wonderfully analytical as the conversation we've just heard, so I'm going to wait till last.
All right. Fair all enough. Right.
Oh, Meghna wants to be the punchline.
You go first,
okay,
Renee.
Maine Governor Paul LePage has provoked a furor over the removal of a mural depicting Maine's labor history from the Department of Labor in the state capitol in Maine, saying it was too biased in favor of labor. But my hubbub is that this is a stunt that is not original. In fact, in 1995, Newt Gingrich, when he just first came in with his new Republican majority in the House, removed a painting depicting the Bread and Roses strike of Lawrence, Massachusetts in 1912, famous painting by Ralph Fasanella that was hanging in a labor committee hearing room in the House committee then, and making exactly the same points, and also renamed the committee room itself so that it would be, you know, seem more neutral and not pro-labor.
So Governor LePage was playing from a playbook. John Stewart still gets the highest marks for me for a great comment where he said, a one-sided mural. Does he understand the nature of a mural? Anyway, I like that. Charlie, what's your hubbub today?
Well, and all the more reason to go to a mural that is celebrating labor history when we finally get some good news on jobs, right?
Yes.
At least nationally, if not locally.
Yeah.
So, my hubbub would be this. Look, I know there's snow on the ground. I know it's freezing cold. I know we all think spring should be here by now. But really, truly, it really is opening day for the Red Sox today in Texas. And they really are coming this way. And baseball really is beckoning. And so, I want to do a shout out to Nick and Colin Barnacle, two young documentary producers who have just produced a film called Down the Line, which really takes you behind the scenes at Fenway. And I, you know, we've all seen everything about Fenway,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
I have never seen characters developed like this. You know, the ball boy and who's got like a day job, and he's sitting there, you know, really like putting a little bit of mud on the baseballs and getting them ready.
And fantastic.
The bat boy is, you know, it's middle-aged guy with a real job. And you're like,
these are
the people who make it happen. It's a great celebration for opening day. It's going to be airing locally this Sunday. And it's going to be on April 3rd at 10:30 p.m. on the MLB Network.
Fantastic. I'm glad to know about that. And we're going to have a little bit more at the end of the show on opening day. So we're all happy it's finally here, even if there is still snow on the ground. But whatever. This is Boston. So here's my hubbub, and it comes from our friends at the satirical newspaper The Onion. And it returns to the discussion about the New York Times plan for a new paywall, which The Onion calls a bold business move. And it gets good. It says, the article describes a groundbreaking new business model in which the news website will charge people money for the goods and services it provides. The whole idea of an American business trying to make a profit off a product it creates is a truly brave and intrepid strategy. According to a media analyst who called it an extremely risky new approach to commerce, wherein legal tender must be exchanged in order to receive a desired service. And finally, to ask the Times 33 million unique visitors to switch to a cash-for-goods-based model from the standard everything online should be free for reasons nobody can really explain-based model is pretty fearless. So that's from our friends at The Onion, and obviously a perspective there that we can all appreciate. Megna, now we cannot...
drum roll,
oh,
please.
No. Well, my hubbub, well, here it is. Okay.
Okay.
So 10 million
this is
people.
Anthony's future?
Oh, it's very near future, and it's my present, in fact. No,
coming
10
soon.
Million people know what this is. But this is Sam and Ren McEntee, their twin boys from Brooklyn, New York. And this was the latest viral video on YouTube. And the thing is, they're 17 months old, and I swear they are having a conversation. They are using the same two syllables.
I have twin brothers, and
you
I am going to tell you. I am not a twin myself, but I have brothers who are twins. These guys still have their own language.
Exactly. And there's a moment in the video, and like I said, 10 million people have seen it, but one of the brothers, he like lifts his hand, he's like, talk to the hand, brother, and the other keeps his feet.
Non-verbal communication.
And it raises, once again, it's raised this idea of like, do twins have their own language,
right.
or is it just you know, a stage of infant language development where there's no semantic sense to it, they're just, you know, blabbing to each other, but that video totally made my day, and 10 million other people too. So,
all right, cool.
They're roommates after all, right?
Someone did tell me that they made more sense than oftentimes what they hear on the radio. But
well, that was a great hubbub worth waiting for, Megan. And thanks to our guest today, Renee Loth, columnist for the Boston Globe. Thanks so much for coming in.
You bet.
And Charlie Sennett, executive editor and executive editor and vice president of Global Post. Thank you for coming in as well.
Thanks a lot.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, there is a link, by the way, to the twin boys at our website at hubbub.wbur.org. And also, we'll have an interview with Nikki Egan next week. But in the meantime, you can see her playing a song called When You're Gone. She played it live in Radio Boston Studio, and you can see that video also at hubbub.wbur.org. And coming up after a quick break, you want to marry the man, but not the military. So what happens when the one you love is a soldier?
Also, first, we're down to the wire, just minutes left in WBUR's spring fundraising campaign. There's still time to do your part. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Here's All Things Considered host Sasha Pfeiffer to tell you how you can help.